Thank you very much. And do you hear well me in the back? Yeah, I have a microphone, but
somebody will.
This is not a microphone.
Oh, it's not a microphone.
It's just recording.
Oh, recording only.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, we speak loud. Well, I'm very grateful for being here, and grateful to the organizers of the program, and to the organizers of the school. At first, I had not realized that this was a school. I thought it was a workshop. So, I think the first thing I have to do is to give an introduction to this dynamical activation approach to stationary non-equilibrium states. So I apologize for those who have heard me already more than once for this repetition, but I think it's necessary. So let me see a little bit. So this will be more or less the program. So the general title is the dynamical large deviation approach to non-equilibrium stationary states. So the first thing, the first part of this lecture will be an introduction and explaining the motivation why this approach was taken. Then well, in all this in this approach, there is a certain it has a considerable importance, the consideration of time reversal and violations of time reversal. This is usually not discussed very much in papers in statistical mechanics. Well, maybe the only justification I can give is that I started my scientific career as an elementary particle physicist, and so you get a certain imprinting, and the imprinting is that about any phenomenon you must look whether there is a symmetry behind or a violation of a symmetry behind. So, but it will turn out to be very useful in connection with this with this problem. So the points that I hope to touch will be a relationship between long range correlations, which have been already been discussed in especially by Derrida, and time reversal and the violation of time reversal invariance. So show that these long range correlations are not limited to non-equilibrium states. You see, in large deviation theory, you have a passive and an active interpretation. This connection with the control theory is what I will call the active interpretation of large deviations. Then I will discuss dynamical phase transitions, and then the Galerotti-Cohen symmetry and its connection with the time reversal. So far, in the lectures that we have been hearing so far, essentially the emphasis was on models. Models, some of them could be solved exactly. My point of view will be macroscopic, and I will describe an effort to construct a first step to the construction of a non-equilibrium thermodynamics. So in some sense it will be complementary, but the connections are very strict, and in fact we when we apply our point of view to models, we find that everything is satisfied. You see, somehow the leading idea is that since it doesn't exist thermodynamics out of equilibrium, it exists only near equilibrium. And but if you want to go further, then you don't know what to do. But so the a guiding idea has been to use models and to look at what is common about very different models and see whether you can extract some general equations which can be true out of equilibrium. So the general situation is a situation in which you have a system which interact with reservoirs. So in the limit you can think of a continuous distribution of reservoirs. So and so that you will have a distribution of chemical potentials of temperatures around the system. So this is the general situation. And you see, I think the best starting point to understand the generalization that I will propose is to start from the postulates of near equilibrium thermodynamics as you find them codified in books around the beginning of the 60s. After that, I don't know of any important book on thermodynamics. For example, a particularly good book is a book by Fitts, which is just called Non-Equilibrium Thermodynamics. So, you see, let's see what are the postulates that you find in those books. Another book is Cullen, it's about the same years, and another one is the second edition of the Lewis and Randall. So, and essentially you find that the following principles are assumed near equilibrium. So the first assumption is local equilibrium, and this says that thermodynamic functions of state exist for each element of the system and are the same functions of the local state variable as the corresponding equilibrium thermodynamic quantity. So, for example, if these rho i's are densities of different chemical species, then the entropy as a function of this variable is the same, and is the same as in equilibrium. The second hypothesis that you find in these books is Markovian evolution. What is Markovian evolution? It says that thermodynamic fluxes, so currents, which if one disregards at first space inhomogeneities, are identified with the derivative, the time derivative of the thermodynamic quantities, at some given instant of time, depend only on the same variables at the same time, and what my chemists call them affinities. These are the derivative of the derivatives of the entropy with respect to its macroscopic arguments. And of course, you see, when you have a current something goes through a system because it is out of equilibrium, since at equilibrium the entropy is at a maximum, so the assumption is that as you go out of equilibrium, the thermodynamic force which drives the system back is the derivative of the entropy, which is now non-zero as soon as you are out of equilibrium. So this you find the name is sometimes affinity, sometimes in Landau-Lifshitz they are called thermodynamic forces, and I think that is the but it's clear what is the meaning. So it's the driving force which brings the system back to equilibrium at a macroscopic level. The third hypothesis, and this goes back already to the 19th century, is that these fluxes are linear functions, near equilibrium are linear functions of these affinities. So, near equilibrium you have the entropy, the affinities are the derivatives of the entropy, And so you expand the entropy around the equilibrium. And so if you recall the definition of this, which are the time derivatives of thermodynamic variables, and then you use for the affinities this expression for the entropy, you find in fact an equation of motion for the thermodynamic variables. And there is a, and from here you can read the basic relationship. You see, this coefficient, which is the product of this matrix, which I will generally call the Onsager matrix, because, Onsager is the one who discussed first in detail this matrix. But, it was introduced in the 19th century, actually. And so you see that this coefficient, which gives the relaxation to equilibrium, at that time these equations were called regression equations. So this is the diffusion coefficient, which it gives you. So you see that this matrix L is the matrix of transport coefficients. And then you see that from here you can read an important relationship, that the diffusion coefficient is related to the entropy by the transport coefficient. This is a relationship which even today, if you look at the board at the Journal of Chemical Physics or Physical Chemistry, it's a basic relationship, because you see this D is something that you can measure, and in fact now you can find very precise measurements of this, for example, in biological solutions and so on. L is much more difficult to measure, but it can be measured. And then so you see by using this relationship you can reconstruct the entropy. Actually, you are not interested in the absolute value of the entropy, but only in its first derivative, which thermodynamically is what is called chemical potential. So from these two measured quantities, and so this is this has been a very useful relationship, but of course it's true only near equilibrium. So one of the basic aim of the theory I'm going to describe is to see what this relationship becomes out of equilibrium. And it will be replaced by an equation, which is an equation Hamilton-Jacobi type. And when you are in equilibrium, then we shall see that this relationship is the solution of this equation, but when you're out of equilibrium, it's much more difficult to solve. So, an important point of what I'm going to say is related to the generalization of this relationship. Well, if I have time, I will show you measurements of these coefficients and how they are used. So, this matrix of transport coefficients has a very important property. It is symmetric. This was attempt to prove this relationship was made already in the 19th century by Lord Kelvin, but his argument was not composite. And the first convincing argument is due to Onsager, who used the time reversibility of the microscopic dynamics. But actually, he uses much less. He uses some statistical form of time reversibility. And in fact, this is true even if the can be true even if the microscopic dynamics is not really time reversible. But so far I do not consider the space inhomogeneities, but if you have space inhomogeneities, then this flux equation, you have to introduce some gradients. So you see they take the form of a continuity equation, And so the what we call regression equation take this form. So you can write it in terms of the diffusion coefficient or by introducing explicitly the entropy. And so this becomes, this in this case, in the Sager case, was this is a linear equation, but in the more general situation, it will be in general a non-linear equation. And when gradients are small, this is usually used in this way. So this is usually called second fixed equation. I make reference to these old things because I think people in my generation have studied these things, and I'm not sure whether in recent times this is still. But statistical mechanics, one of the aims is to set up a macroscopic description. As in the equilibrium is a model, a very successful model of thermodynamics, and which provides a theory, a very detailed theory of phase transition. So similar aims are. Well, this Onsager matrix and its symmetry properties, just to give an example to be concrete, a TV thermoelectricity, as I said, at least in my generation we studied these things as Seebeck effect, Peltier effect, and this can be used to test the symmetry of Onsager matrix. And well, you make experiments either with a temperature difference, and you have a two metal contact, and you keep the circuit open, or you let the current flow and measure the heat produced. This is a way. This is just the prototype phenomenon which gives you information on this transport coefficients. Okay, so now the approach I'm going to describe was developed in the last 5-6 years in collaboration with various people, and there are now several papers, and maybe at the end of the next lecture I will give you a list of references. So these are the people involved in this program, which is going on in several directions now. So the point is how we generalize this near equilibrium theory. We have no hint. You don't know what to do. But and that is where large deviation theory, which was discussed already in quite detail for some models by Derrida, comes into play. And the starting point is to remember, as far as I know, the first large deviation estimate used in physics is the Einstein formula for thermodynamic fluctuations. Of course, he didn't call that way this formula. And actually, if you have time, I suggest to read the very interesting paper by Einstein. It was a lecture that he gave in 1910 at the Zurich Physical Society. And it has been translated into French in a booklet issued last year for the by the Institut Poincaré in Paris. And it's interesting because Einstein had a great respect for Boltzmann, but he thought that Boltzmann formula connecting entropy and probability was useless. But he says that, but not too explicitly. But then he says that it has to be used in the opposite way. And it has to be used as a phenomenological definition of probability. So let me recall Einstein's theory of equilibrium for fluctuation, because that is the real starting point it has been at least the real starting point of our problem. So you have a system, and then sometime you find that a portion of this system, a macroscopic portion, is out of equilibrium. Rho bar is the equilibrium value of the thermodynamic variable, but this volume is out of equilibrium. So Einstein formula, just by reversing Boltzmann, it says that this probability is the exponential of the entropy variation of the system, and if you have entropy density, so is the volume times the variation of the entropy density. And so you see the volume, so since delta S is negative, so it's exponentially small, and the volume in general is a large parameter, but it says, okay, we somehow thermodynamically we can put our hands on the entropy, so we can use this formula for computing fluctuations. And then you see that and that is in fact the case in which we shall be most interested. This delta S is the variation of the total entropy, so the environment and the system. And then you can see easily that if T is constant, this is a fluctuation at constant temperature and at constant volume, actually this delta S is just minus the free energy change of the system divided by the temperature. So essentially, why is interesting this formula? Because you see, this gives you now we let's go back to the point of view of Boltzmann. Because if you are able to establish similar formulas for the situation out of equilibrium, then you have a way of defining a free energy out of equilibrium. And so far I don't know of any other natural way, maybe there are, but of defining a thermodynamic function out of equilibrium. So, and you see, I now will generalize this point of view, let's say Einstein point of view, to a dynamical setting. And the point is that everything I'm going to say is verified in models. We have already heard about the simple exclusion, and then about the zero range, the KMP model, and which are other different models. And you see that what I will discuss essentially is true for all the models we know. So you see the beginning of some more general principle or equations which can be applied out of equilibrium. So I don't repeat, I remember the simple exclusion is just to give, but we shall come back quite often, is the model which has been discussed, and you have a particle can jump to an even inside only if it is empty, of zero range, so there are no limits on the number of particles in each site, and if it has the number of particles at site X, then the transition rate are in general nonlinear functions of. But as I said, now there are two things that. So I said before that this Onsaga relationship between diffusion and transport and entropy will go into a more complicated equation, which I call the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And now these regression equations, which describe the return to equilibrium of a system, in general will go to nonlinear, sometimes linear, sometimes nonlinear hydrodynamic equations. Now, these are typical things that can be proved rigorously for the models. And one of the great advances in the last 20 years in studying mathematically this stochastic models of stochastic gases has been to prove hydrodynamic equations which appear as laws of large numbers. So it's a more complicated law of large numbers if you compare it with, usually we do the arithmetic mean when we do several measurements, take the arithmetic mean and then we prove that in probability this goes to some deterministic object, and large deviations are in fact deviations from a law of large number from the point of view of probability. So this is a more complicated law of large numbers. So in the models you define two important variables, which are, you see, what is one is called the empirical density, and this is the usual definitions that physicists use, that so is the sum of delta function. You see, X is the microscopic coordinate, U is the macroscopic coordinate. So you sum up the number of particles at each site and you take an average. So this is what you call the empirical density. And you can give it a more fancy mathematical expression by considering it as a distribution on test function. And then the empirical current has a similar definition. It's more complicated because a current is associated to a trajectory because it involves time. So it's more complicated. You have to count the number of particles which go from X to Y minus the number of particles here which go from Y to X and take the difference. So this gives you the number of particles which flow two points. Well, you can give a definition. Yeah?
Do you have multiple time scales in this process?
Well, you have a microscopic time scale, and then you have a macroscopic time scale, which is of diffusive type. So it's the macroscopic time, you take the microscopic time divided by the square of the number of the length of the system. Yeah.
So you're going to develop models that have a microscopic time scale of relaxation back to this local equilibrium?
Yes. We could discuss all that, but I don't think there is time really to go into the details of. To prove hydrodynamic equation is not an easy matter. But as I said, I will concentrate on the macroscopic aspects. Okay, but the microscopic systems are just behind. So I will talk about them only insofar as I need. But I don't want to go. It is interesting that all these hydrodynamic equations have been proved rigorously. But it's still quite a hard proof. So I guess. So in some sense, the subject is not yet in its best form, because I think one should find some simplifications or some better strategies. So what are the laws of large numbers that one can prove? Okay, so you prove that this empirical density goes into a continuous variable when you let the number of degrees of freedom of the system go to infinity, and so you can define the local a local function of time and the macroscopic coordinate, which is the
what is u
is the macroscopic coordinate, so is the macroscopic, so is the microscopic divided by the number of degrees of freedom, so that is the scaling. And the law of large numbers for the current is more complicated, but it's very important because it goes to a quantity which can be expressed itself in terms of the thermodynamic variables, and if you have an external field, E is an external field, then you have a kind of conductivity matrix which is actually Onsager matrix, but somehow we call chi in this, but it's Onsager matrix. So They are objects where it's an object like the diffusion coefficient, which is determined by equilibrium properties. You see, we have an essential hypothesis is local equilibrium. So locally, we assume that we have enough ergodicity, but it can be proved for the models, to that the system is always in equilibrium.
The field that you're writing down there, E, how is that related back to the microscopic quantities in the
A-surrection? Well, it's a weak field.
Oh, okay.
So it's a weak field, so it's a field divided by the number of degrees of freedom. So it's acting on each degree of freedom is infinitesimal when the number of degrees of freedom goes to infinity. But it's still it's strong enough to modify the macroscopic behavior. So you see, at this point, your hydrodynamic equation becomes a continuity equation, but in fact it's a hydrodynamic equation because one has been able to express the right-hand side, the current, in terms of the thermodynamic variables themselves. So. And all this. Now we come to large fluctuations, dynamical large fluctuation. That is the difference with what Derrida described. And what is the difference? That you see, as I said, he discussed the stationary state, which is a time-independent state, and fluctuations from this. Time-independent states, so, and introduced a large fluctuation functional for a bit. Now, as I said, you have hydrodynamics can be seen as a law of large numbers, so that will be, if they consider a finite number of degrees of freedom, very large, but still finite, this will be still a fluctuating quantity, because it's only in the limit that you get the law of large numbers. So you may ask a more complicated question. So let me maybe use. So here you have equilibrium, let's say. Here you have the equilibrium value of, but then you observe your system. It may be that at some point you find spontaneously a state rho at some time t1, and then it will follow a trajectory which is not the hydrodynamic trajectory, which is the law of large numbers. So it will be a dynamical fluctuation, and it will end up with some value rho at some time t2. Then you want to calculate the probability of this event. It will be a very rare event, but still you can compute its probability. It's different from zero. But then we shall see that since there is an active interpretation of large deviations, then you don't have to wait the age of the universe to see these things. So, that is the question I am asking. So, you see, it's well, for convenience, I call minus t0 the initial time. So, you have initially this value, and then. So, now you have to generalize Einstein formula, because the Einstein formula was only for static fluctuations. So, if you ask what is the probability that. Your empirical density be close to some trajectory for a certain interval on time, which is minus t0, well, first of all, there will be, since the point of view is Markovian, and again, in the models you can prove it rigorously, so you will have the probability of observing the initial state, and this will be given by Einstein formula. So this will be the first term here. But then there will be a term associated with this trajectory. And of course, this term since the law of large numbers is the hydrodynamic equation, if by chance you take a trajectory which is a solution of the hydrodynamic equation, this term must vanish, because that takes place with probability 1. So, but that we have seen similar consideration in the Derrida's vectors. So let me call the equilibrium value, and as rho bar, which is essentially a solution of the right-hand side of the hydrodynamic equation, because it's stationary. So that is the form of the large deviation principle, which is what I call the dynamical form. So you have a term which is connected with observing the initial state, and then a term which gives you the probability of observing a certain trajectory. Okay. So hydrodynamics can give you only relaxation trajectories. A trajectory like this usually will not be possible. Now, there are immediately important consequences that you can derive. As I say, this type of large deviation estimate can be proved in models.
So far, we don't know what the dynamical contribution is, right? I mean, this you're going to tell us. We don't know yet what the J is in your formula. I mean, the large deviation function.
No, we don't know yet. For the moment, we use only the fact that it exists. Okay? Well, I don't know whether I will be able to complete my program. Now, when you have a Markov process or a Markov chain, you can define the time-reversed process. And for Markov chain, it's very simple, I mean, the definition. And it has been already, reference to it has been made, but let me tell you how it is defined, because it's very simple. If you are in a Hamiltonian setting, you reverse the time and you reverse the momenta. But how do you reverse time in a stochastic process? Let's say it's a Markov chain. So in a lattice gas. So for example, think of our density, empirical density. Well, that is it. So you consider the value of this process at different times. So this gives you a trajectory of the chain. And in the stationary state, the probability of this trajectory will be the product of the initial state, so which is calculated with the invariant measure, so with the stationary ensemble. And then you have the different transition probabilities until you end up with the state phi tn. Mu is the invariant measure. Now, I call star the time-reversed dynamics, and you define the probability for the time-reversed dynamics, which you can prove that it is still a Markov chain, if you use, in fact, as initial measure, the invariant measure. And so this equation defines the... So, you see, the probability for the time-reversed process of a certain trajectory is equal to the probability of the same trajectory for the original process, but in the reverse time. So, you see, we start from the final time, and we end up with the initial time. Okay? And so, if you apply this to just one transition, this defines the transition probability for the time-reversed chain. And in general, it will be a different dynamics. And you see, to calculate it, you need the invariant measure, and you need the initial transition probability and the invariant measure. And when you have detailed balance, this means that these two transition probabilities are the same. And in that case, you say that your chain is reversible. Okay, so now let's apply this definition. So, in particular, you can say that if the chain is reversible, the transition, the matrix, which describes the transition probabilities, is self-adjoint with respect to the invariant measure. Now, let's apply to large deviations this definition. So we have a process, we have the time-reversed process, and they both have a large deviation functional. They have, both have hydrodynamics, and which can be very different, because it's clear that if you have heat flowing between two temperatures, I mean, the dynamics which will reverse the heat flow, so it will flow from the lower temperature to the higher temperature, must be very different. And the time reversal dynamics, it does just that. So in general, it will be when you are out of equilibrium, it will be a very different dynamics. So let's apply this definition of time reversal. So we consider, you see immediately that this gives you a certain relationship between the process, the large deviations of the process and of its time reversal. So you see that if you consider a trajectory from tau 1 to tau 2 in the reverse process, this must be related to the trajectory in the time reversal direction of the initial process. You see there is an exchange of initial and final states, and then you have to evaluate if this is a trajectory, you have to evaluate the other functional with the time reversal trajectory. Let's apply this to a special case, to the case of the spontaneous fluctuations. Spontaneous fluctuations, you can always normalize your entropy or free energy in such a way that it is zero at the stationary state, because I mean the additive constant doesn't count. So you find that from this relation here, you find this relationship between the large deviation functional for the initial process and the large deviation functional for the time reversal process. Okay, when will you obtain? So you want to know what is the probability of spontaneous fluctuation. We start from equilibrium, stationary state, not equilibrium, at minus infinity, and you find it at some value rho of the thermodynamic variables at zero, and then it gives you this relationship. But now, to optimize this probability, you have to take some infimum of this object over all possible trajectories. And then this is a time-independent quantity, so it is not touched. This part here, you know where it vanishes. It's a positive object, and it vanishes when its argument is a solution of the time-reversed hydrodynamics. So if theta rho is the solution of the time-reversed hydrodynamics, this then disappears. And at this point, you get the following... the following result, that the entropy of free energy, I mean, I identify them, I mean, there is a sign difference, but so you have the following, that your entropy, out of equilibrium entropy, is just the, you have to take the minimum of this dynamic and large deviation functional over all trajectories which connect the stationary state to the fluctuation. You see, here you have accomplished something which goes very close to the relationship of von Sager that actually is the generalization of von Sager relationship. Why? Because, you see, this functional will depend, and I will give you soon some explicit expression, will depend on hydrodynamics. Now, hydrodynamics needs two inputs, diffusion coefficient and transport coefficient. These are the information. So this equation relates the entropy, non-equilibrium entropy or free energy, which is a static quantity, time-independent quantity, two dynamical quantities which are contained here, which are the transport coefficients and the diffusion coefficients. Now, we gradually go to the to specifying a little more this functional. From all the models, we know that this functional has the following form. They are an integral over the interval of time in which we are interested of some density that we may call a Lagrangian, is a Lagrangian of a particular type. But then once you have a Lagrangian and you have the thermodynamic variables and their time derivatives, then you can define a Hamiltonian. You take its Sargent transform. And then to this variational principle, there is, as we know from mechanics, there is associated the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And the Hamilton-Jacobi, so once you have performed this Lagrangian transform, then you have the following Hamilton-Jacobi equation associated to this variational principle. And this is an equation for the out of equilibrium. For it's always valid, both in equilibrium and out of equilibrium. And as we will discuss in a moment, in equilibrium it's very easy to discuss, and the solution will be the Onsager relationship we already know. And out of equilibrium it's more complicated, but there are a lot of consequences. Actually, it's a basic. Yes.
Making the connection between the Lagrangian and the Hamiltonian, generally you need convexity assumptions. Convexity and the time derivatives of arguments.
Well, I mean, you take the. Well, you know, in all the models we have discussed, I mean, this is not a problem really. It's well defined. But even if you have a non-convex object, the Lagrangian transform is well defined. Yeah.
But the duality between.
I don't use the duality. Okay. I just define the Lagrangian transform of this Lagrangian. And now, for all the models that have been considered so far, they are conservative models, in the sense that the number of particles is conserved. Apparently, in all these models, this what I call Lagrangian is a quadratic expression in the hydrodynamics. Symbolically, I have written it in this way. Never mind what it means, the inverse of a gradient, but it can be given. The inverse of a gradient, in fact, is not well defined, because there is always a constant floating. But you see, we have two of them. So this is the inverse of an elliptic operator, and this is well defined.
What are the boundary conditions for that?
Usually Dirichlet boundary conditions. Okay. So in this case, you measure the probability of this trajectory essentially by, you see, this is the right hand side of hydrodynamics. So this gives you a quadratic form in the deviation from hydrodynamics. And the metric of this quadratic form is just the inverse of Onsager metrics. Actually, this is not really new, because near equilibrium, Onsager and Makloop in 1953 developed something that they did recognize as large deviation estimate. So mathematicians have worked a lot on Onsager and Makloop function, and they did not interpret that but as a large deviation function. But when you have a large parameter, it becomes really a large deviation estimate. I discussed once this with the probabilist Ofer Zeitouni, and he was worried about my interpretation. And I say that is why it's good, that paper, because different people can read different things in that paper. And then he said, "Oh, I understand. It's like the Bible." So, And so you see, from these conservative models, this Hamilton Jacobi equation takes this simple form. It's a quadratic expression, and then here you have these brackets mean that you integrate our space variables.
What is the d rho?
This one.
Yes.
This is the right hand side of hydrodynamics. It's minus the divergence of the current. Okay, so it's quadratic, and you see, this is an interesting equation, and I believe that in all cases where you have a hydrodynamic regime, this is the correct equation for non-equilibrium situation. And you see, this was extracted by studying models, but this is also a phenomenological equation, because the only inputs that you need are measurable quantities, which is the Onsaga matrix and the diffusion coefficient, which is inside here. So, but Hamilton Jacobi equations are difficult to solve. In fact, now I'm very much interested in, because people in control theory have developed lots of methods in discussing this type of equations. And so, at least, my hope is that this may become really an equation where people put numbers and get out an answer about the entropy.
Question, I mean, huh? If you have a strong driving field, this equation is still valid or not?
Personally, I have not investigated
okay,
that.
So
but Lorenzo Bertini says that it is still valid, okay. At least in certain cases. Well, from here you can also derive the general form of fluctuation dissipation theorem. So if this is the hydrodynamics, this is the hydrodynamics associated to the time reversed process, then the sum of the two is related to the non-equilibrium entropy. But I don't want to go, I mean, there are many consequences of this equation that I don't want to discuss. So let me summarize what we have achieved so far. So as I said more than once, the aim was to set up some macroscopic equations. What do we know so far? So first, there exists an entropy functional, an out-of-equilibrium entropy functional. And the stationary state is again determined by maximum principle, exactly like the thermodynamic variables. Thermodynamic field satisfy in general nonlinear hydrodynamic equation, which are of have the form of a conservation law. And as I say, this type of equation follows from a diffusive scaling in the presence of a drift of order 1 over n, so the external field must not be too strong. And how does it appear, the interaction with the reservoirs? It appears in the form of boundary conditions that you have to impose on the solutions of this equation. So, and the first time this hydrodynamic equation were generalized on non-equilibrium situation by Eng, Leibovitz, and Herbersbaum, I think already 15 years ago or more, I think. they proved this type of equation rigorously for a wide class of models, also out of equilibrium. And they have the same form as in equilibrium, only the space of function that you consider is different. And you can understand it, because this derives from the principle of local equilibrium. So locally, you don't distinguish between equilibrium and non-equilibrium at this level. And then the third conclusion, that now we have an equation for the non-equilibrium entropy, and this is the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And you also see immediately that the derivative of this equation from the Hamilton-Jacobi equation has a definite sign. So you get a relaxation, a kind of H theorem. Now, in the last few minutes, I want to start thinking, discussing, but I don't think there is real time. So maybe the best thing is that I describe some further consequences of this Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Not only there are many that when you apply to models and so on. For example, simple exclusion model that was discussed by Derrida, this input that you need, the diffusion coefficient, is just one. It's very simple. And this, what I call orthogonal matrix, also is very simple. It's rho 1 minus rho. So in that case, you know exactly what is the input to put in this equation. But, well, maybe I will discuss a little bit more next time. But there is an interesting consequence of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation that gives you a decomposition of hydrodynamics. You see, in the Onsager near equilibrium theory, you got that the time derivatives of thermodynamic variables were directly related to the derivative of the entropy, to the thermodynamic force. Here you get that out of equilibrium, the general form of the hydrodynamic equation is that the hydrodynamics, maybe this sign must be plus, it doesn't matter anyway. You get the term which is the same as you got in equilibrium, but where here is the out of equilibrium thermodynamic functional, but then you get another term which is orthogonal to it. So you see it separates into a dissipative part and a non-dissipative part. And if you go to the same decomposition of the time reversal hydrodynamics, the only thing which changes is this the sign of the non-dissipative part. So you see, so physically, these two terms, now there are two terms in the decomposition of hydrodynamics. And yesterday Derrida spoke about no locality of correlations. And then in fact, this style of the lab deviation function, while even if this hydrodynamics is very simple, it may be the heat equation, like in the, these two parts are not local, but they recombine to give a local part. And you see, the fact that when you go to the time reverse hydrodynamics, the first term is the same and the second one is change of sign, reminds of, well, if you consider a very simple model, as you find in the book in books in solid-state physics, if you consider an electron in a conductor in presence of a magnetic field, so you have a dissipative part, which goes depends on the collisions, and then you have a magnetic field, so you have a Lorentz force. And then if you do time reversal, you see that this is exactly what happens, that this equation of motion, you get the dissipative part remains the same and the Lorentz force changes sign. So you see the situation here that we have particle system, no magnetic fields, but this non-dissipative part behaves under time reversal exactly like Lorentz force. And you see there is a kind of equivalence principle. Think of the Hall effect. You have a plate, there is some current flowing, and then you apply magnetic field. This creates a potential difference across the plate. Here we have, in the stationary non-equilibrium state, you have exactly a dual of this. You apply the difference in chemical potentials, or temperatures, and this generates in the hydrodynamic equation a term which has the same type of transformation properties under time reversal as the Lorentz force. So And this, this decomposition derives directly from the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And, well, there are many other consequences that now I am not able to discuss. I will try to maybe to be more concise next lecture. And anyway, if anyone wants some explanation privately, then available, so this is a good time to stop. Thank you.
In your generalized hydrodynamic equations, it's always looked like conservation laws. So it
yes.
looked like the irreversible thermodynamic relevant macroscopic parameters are always conserved quantities, but that's not necessarily true. Right? If you go through a second order phase transition, your order parameter, if it's non-conserved, is also slow. Needs to be taken into account as a generalized
hydrodynamic. Yeah, I will discuss that.
We'll come to that later.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Your assumption that the Lagrangian is quadratic, does that not embody any implicit assumption of being near equilibrium?
No. No, I mean, it's like when you do things about a Langevin equation. You may have a drift, which is a highly nonlinear function of your variable. Then you do large deviation theory for the Langevin equation, what is called Wenzel and Friedman theory. And then you discover that at the level of large deviation, everything is almost Gaussian.
Any other questions? Well, if not, then thank you again very much.